This week on RSVMB Update, the lower walls come crashing down with Azanadra's Quest, the first in what can only be described as a RuneScape visual novel. We uncover twists and turmoil as we learn about Zerosian impulses, the World Guardians, Elder Halls, and the Temple Knights. This is RSVMB Update, episode 818, recorded Thursday, February 25th, 2021. Gielinor's special place. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to RSBNB Update. I'm making subtle motions with my hands right now that you guys can't see. I'm in effect waving the audience in, guiding them in for a landing.
Welcome,
to their
welcome.
Big, comfy sofas. That is Questcaping. Welcome back.
Hello, hello, hello.
You last joined us for, I think it was the first mini quest of the year, I think, right?
Yes, I think I did, and there was a big lore stream at the time, too.
Right, okay, so that's why we decided to go with you for that one. Welcome back, and you know, Quest Week, it's always fun to have a Clan Quest member on, and you know, the name Questcaping makes a lot of sense.
Hey.
Very involved in your lore and whatnot. But of course, that doesn't take away from the fact that Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week.
Thank you, Shane.
And I'm, of course, Shane12088 in game. If you guys want to join us in game, you can find us at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. And, you know, we had a couple people in there for the quest this week. And, you know, we're going to talk about the quest. We're going to talk about the current state of affairs when it comes to the player avatar refresh. We're also going to talk about some little hidden mobile changes that really weren't documented this week, but everybody should, of course, be paying attention to because they have big ramifications for the progress of the mobile client, your questions. And, of course, we'll wrap it all up with some good picks of the week. And, you know, let's just dive right into this one, Azanadra's Quest, the kickoff of the Elder God Wars, the beginning, I guess you could say, the starting pistol, as Maud Osborne calls it. And, you know, I'm going to say some things throughout this quest that are going to be a little bit controversial. I'll save those for midway point or maybe by the end of it. But one thing I just want everybody to, you know, go into this looking at is that this is a huge quest. This is perhaps, I think, I'm trying to remember what the last big consequential quest on this was, because I don't even think Desperate Times and Desperate Measures were this consequential.
Yeah, I genuinely think it's the biggest lore shakeup, the biggest change of the status quo since the world events, and I will stick by that.
Okay. Since the world events, so even bigger than Endgame, you're thinking.
Bigger than Endgame, yes, in terms of the shift of power.
Okay. Yeah, and of course, shift of power could imply many things, and, you know, some things do happen in the quest, but this is going to be a fairly lore-intensive discussion of Azanadra's quest, and as a result of this, as this quest is new, this is going to be filled with spoilers for about the next hour or so as we discuss this, so just keep that in mind. If you don't want spoilers yet, fast forward until we start talking about the other things in about an hour, maybe 50 minutes time from now. But this quest is one that is another beginning of a storyline, and it doesn't require any previous quests to have been done in order to access it. The only thing you're asked to have completed is the Vault of Shadows mini quest, which you can complete naturally at 107 Archaeology, or you can complete it at 58 Archaeology as a mini quest. And of course, this is the puzzle involved in Caradet that frees Trindine, which, you know, when this happened a few weeks ago, we thought, okay, what does that mystery involve, and who is there? And that person is obviously going to be featured in the next quest, and the puzzle pieces started to line up last week.
Wasn't quite expecting it to be this soon.
No, neither was I,
Certainly pleasantly surprised, but
yeah, it's an interesting character. I think, especially someone that's been frozen inside, or not frozen, but stuck inside that temple for so long. But
bit of a time capsule.
You also need 70 divination, 58 archaeology, 58 agility, and 58 prayer. I'm assuming the 58 agility was for the Frenescape bit, right?
Oh, yeah, fair enough. There wasn't really anything else no. that required agility.
No, and I think that sums it up, in, you know, because we did take a trip to Frenescape, but of course we are putting the cart before the horse on this, so let's just dive into this one with this quest.
Right.
And, you know, this quest is picking up off the end of Desperate Measures, and we know, of course, what happened at the end of Desperate Measures. Karapak was rebound by the stone, and or not by the stone anymore because that doesn't exist, but he was put under curse again by the Elder Gods for his mucking about. And as a result, Karapak's plan, as we put together in Desperate Times and Desperate Measures, really didn't work. So as a result, it's back to the drawing board with the Council, and this is a different look on the Council than we saw in Desperate Times and Desperate Measures, because, you know, one of the things that happens when you first go into this council meeting is that you're greeted with Azanadra there, and he points out to you, and your character also, of course, takes a notice how everybody who is taking part in the council meeting has fallen under Saren's gaze, and she's like, okay, well, we'll just fall back to my original plan of creating a garden. And I think Armadil was also there, and he noticed
yes.
that. That was a problem, too.
And Ixlurin, they had their own little corner of various god-adjacent people who weren't under the sway of this aura and weren't completely brainwashed by it like everyone else.
Yeah.
But both of them had their own reasons for not helping. Ixlurin is, of course, unwilling to work with Azanadra, who, well, ran away from him many, many years ago. And, oh, there's quite a nice bit of segment of dialogue there. Azanadra calls him Psychopompous, which is a rather nice Latin title.
And you know, that's exactly the kind of term you'd expect a Majorat to refer to someone as. And the whole idea behind this meeting is that you, Azanadra, and, you know, Armadil is also there. But Armadil doesn't really feature in this quest beyond this initial setup of it. And Azanadra, of course, wants to find his own plan to deal with the problem. And he makes a point that Saren is, of course, obsessed with the Elder God themselves. And we saw this in the cutscene last week. And he has this idea in his head, and this is planted very early on from the quest, that perhaps it's not the Elder Gods themselves we should worry about, but perhaps it's their eggs instead that we should be worrying about. Because, you know, there's lots of theories about what can happen when the Elder God eggs hatch, and our characters will, of course, become all aware of that in good time. Now, you know, this quest is interesting as well, and I'm going to put this out there, and I want everybody to keep this in mind as we move through this. This quest is interesting because there's no puzzle component, there's no combat component, and there's no fetch component. It is a run-through of a boatload of dialogue from start to finish that is really just a quest of stringing things together and talking to people, and your character makes inferences along the way that puts the pieces of the puzzle together. So I just want everybody to keep that in mind as we go through this.
I think I called it RuneScape the Visual Novel.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting that. I forget who I was talking to on that. Was that you or Diana? I said that this would be a perfect quest to do as a movie because of that.
Ooh, that must have been Diana. But I think that's quite interesting, yeah. It's a very sort of linear A to B, watch everything play out.
With a big, you know, third act and then a conclusion and, you know, ramifications for part two, right?
So
would have made good sense for that. But anyways, after the council, you're told to go meet Azanadra at Caradet. And, you know, when you first get to Caradet, you make your way down to the Praetorium, and you find, and outside there, you find Azanadra and Trindine having a discussion about what happens going forward with this. And
can I just interject here? Because I'm following along with the quest transcript on the wiki, and what they've got here is what happens when you talk to Dr. Nabonic outside the dig site. Do you know what happens there?
No, what happened there?
Oh, well, so, of course, you've got Dr. Nabedek there, but you've also got Azanadra inside.
Right.
And now,
which
yeah,
is a bit odd, thinking
just,
about it, right?
We'll just have both in the two places at once.
Yeah.
But what's happening here is you chat to Dr. Nabedek, and he says, I'm not Azanadra. I'm just filling in for him. Apparently, he had more important things to do. So you keep on talking, and it turns out he's actually Wahizatel in disguise as Dr. Nabedek.
See, I clicked on him, but I didn't go deep enough into the conversation tree because it looked generic. Okay.
It's actually bugged for what it's worth. It was bugged on my playthrough. I even had to submit a bug report live. But
okay.
Basically, if you did the Vault of Shadows via the mini quest, you get the bugged version. But if you did it properly as a mystery, you get the Wahizatel dialogue here.
Interesting. Because I mean, I saw the, you know, the typical options of the site manager and whatnot. So I just, you know, clicked on that. And then I went through that first one. And I thought, okay, so maybe this is just a bit odd that he's in the same spot and he has the same dialogue options. So I thought, maybe
nothing's
up here.
It's a shame that wasn't quite working on release for everyone.
Yeah.
But it's a nice little thing to have instead of an oversight. You've got this character who's not used very much these days
and
having a bit of a role to play.
You know what the funny part is? I'm actually there because I'm running the video for the folks on the YouTube version. After I finished that, you could see that I shook my mouse and the camera in frustration because there was nothing that was as an Azanadra based when I talked to Dr. Nabedek there.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, people might be wondering what exactly we're talking about here, but of course the Majorat have their human forms as well, and Azanadra's human form is Dr. Nabedek.
Yes, sneaky shapeshifters they are.
Okay, so to the Praetorium. We find Ariane and, or sorry, not Ariane, that's coming next, Trindine and Azanadra. Anything here that you want to highlight? I mean, I don't have anything here that I want to highlight. Just the fact that, you know, this is seen as pretty much of a staging area, and you know, it's determined that the next step is we need to go to Franiscae to see if we can find any evidence of what happened there on that world to see what might happen here on Gielinor.
Yeah, there's not much here. It's basically setting up. You'll have all these discussions around the war table, which is quite a nice setting to return to several times in this quest. And Trindine has a nice line about being caught up on current events. Seems like it's just been one long disaster while I've been gone. Yeah.
It's kind of like real life too, eh?
Yay!
Anyways, after that, make your way to Franiscae by way of the World Gate. And then there, you know, you progress through the various agility obstacles, and there's a number of points where you can chat with Azanadra along the way. And he's got a couple of interesting lines of dialogue. You can, for example, ask him about his relationship with Zaros and the like. But you can also ask about the Zarosian afterlife that Death was talking about, which was referred to, I think that was referred to in another one of our mini quests this
Elegy.
Year, right?
In Elegy, okay. Yeah. You can ask them a bunch about the afterlife of various different belief systems.
Yep. And Erebus was confirmed.
Yes.
Right.
So that
okay.
was interesting.
It wasn't the mini quest, it was the Raksha dialogue I was thinking of.
Ah, yeah. So there's a weird commonality there. Why does Raksha refer to Erebus and Azanadra as the Zarosian afterlife? How does Raksha have that term in its vocabulary? Because Raksha has had nothing to do with the Zarosian Empire at all, from what I've seen, apart from, well, just having a bit of Shadow Anima nicked by Zaros,
you know,
in that mini quest.
Kind of having that little encounter with the Codex, right?
Yeah, so that seems to be the only commonality, the Codex itself. Can't help but wondering, Erebus has got to have something to do with that.
Yeah, and that was by far the most interesting thing through our little trip through Franiscae. And then, you know, aside from that, nothing out in the ordinary to report there. Your whole objective here is to get to the Elder Halls at the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, for what it's worth,
you can do Elder Divination.
There is something that Azanadra starts saying here that carries on through the quest. So Azanadra says, "You speak of Zaros as though he were a friend, an ally." Player says,
"Right.
Isn't he?" Azanadra, "Of course not. Zaros is a god. With him lies all authority. If I need to know something, I'll be told it." And that, yeah, really sums up his belief system, eh?
Yeah.
Zaros as a god is someone inherently different from anyone else.
And it also showcases how, you know, with Zaros' attempts to pull the strings behind the scenes, you can have something that is, you know, the stance one day, but then the next day that'll get completely thrown out the window mm-hmm. because it's just changed. And, you know,
Zaros works in mysterious ways.
Just like time travel.
Yay!
But you get to the end and you get into the Elder Halls, and lo and behold, who do you find in there? Arianne.
Yay!
And we were told.
Haven't seen you
since
Heart of Stone.
Yeah, that's a long time. And we were told that the Signature Heroes were going to make their appearance yet again. And, you know, this was the first time that this had happened. And you kind of, you know, do a double take. You're wondering why she was there. And she says that, "I'm a seer. I can feel, you know, when things are off." And she feels that there's, you know, definitely something off with the way that Shadow Anima has been interacting and what's going on with the Elder God eggs.
Mm-hmm. And she's got an interesting perspective here.
All right.
So, yeah, so what Arianne is coming from, she, of course, hasn't had all the adventures that you've had as the World Guardian. She's got a relatively detached view from the outside. She's been watching all this happen as someone who is clearly a researcher, but also someone who's kind of left out of the big events.
Yeah.
And so you sort of catch her up a bit, which helps as a handy recap of the quests for those who haven't done them.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Yeah, that's good. It's good.
It's an interesting perspective on what the ordinary person knows, eh?
Yeah, and you know, another thing I caught them doing is that with this there was also a bit of dialogue in here that served to effectively fill the player in on what's been happening with the Elder Gods, because if you go into each of the halls here, there's one for each of the five Elder Gods, and they say that, you know, Ma effectively had her stillborn egg, and Azanadra says that she was recently put out of her misery. Jazz used her egg to create the Stone of Jazz, which of course leaves the three eggs for Wen, Full, and Bic. And, you know, this is effectively a crash course in Elder God mythology for those who might not have been aware of that before. And, you know, I think that's a very good thing to do. And for anybody who had concerns going in that this quest might have, you know, cut too many corners in terms of the limitations, that you didn't need any previous quest requirements for it, I don't think you have to worry after that.
Yeah. It's a relatively quick cut.
You don't need to. Yeah, I mean,
you needed it to kind of set up. If you hadn't done any of the prior content, and then you go into this, until you get this explanation, I think you probably could be a little lost.
Yeah, you would be, until you get to the Elder Halls and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But the next chapter is, of course, to look through all of the various leftovers of the eggs that hatched on Frenisquet, and you can do that down each of the various halls, and you examine each one of them, and it tells you a bit of a backstory behind each of the Elder Gods. And, you know, I don't think there's anything we need to necessarily talk about here. It just, you know, in effect confirms what Bic, Full, and Wen are all about.
Well, there's something interesting when it comes to Ma's egg, isn't there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, go ahead.
So, for a long time, we've known that there's some sort of icy icy corruption all through Mars Egg. And for a long time, it was speculated that that was something to do with Wen, like Wen sabotaging one of her own sisters. But what they do here is Azanadra goes there and tells you this was not Wen's doing. Apparently, it's something to do with the magical resonance of it, is how he can tell. And yeah, so instead, he says, it reminds me of a black stone that Zemmour Eagle used for necromancy back in the day.
Oh, okay. Yes. I remember that now.
So, a black stone, eh?
Yeah, and of course that's referring to the Blackstone Dragon, Elite Dungeon 2.
Oh, okay, yep. That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, we've got big associations with Zaltak here, so there's a little bit of a hook for future storylines.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I'm sure people are out there jumping up and down hoping that Zaltak would come in on this, because I know that after Elite Dungeon 3, we were told that the Zaltak story was effectively done and there wouldn't be any more of it. But I know there are people out there who are big proponents of Zaltak and wanted more from that, and, you know, we're kind of thinking that there might have been a Ma connection back in the day, so to speak, with him. And
validation.
And this validates that theory, of course. So, any comments on any of the other eggs? Or egg remnants, rather?
Well, there's a little bit of lore on the Majorat that gets dropped here about what their life was on Frenisce before Ictharon came along and brought them over to Gilanor. So, Azanadra says that life was a lot harder here than on Gilanor, even accounting for the God Wars. So, he'd lived to several hundred years old, which was unusual for them, and he was one of the oldest and strongest. So, that really contextualizes where Azanadra is in the context of the Majorat in general, though we don't really know how much about how old the others were. I know Zamorak was one of the originals that Children of Mar confirms that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I guess the Legatus Maximus being Zamorak and the Pontifex Maximus being Azanadra, they were two of the oldest, most senior Majorat in that society.
I wonder if that's ever going to come back when the eggs start hatching, that dynamic between the two of them. Because I mean, I think we see the start of that perhaps near the end of the quest when they go off together and we'll get there. But I wonder how that dynamic's all going to come into play, if it'll remain that way or if it'll get strained. But that's
there's a conspicuous lack of Zamorak here, for what it's worth, throughout this whole quest.
Yeah. And, you know, it kind of just shows in a way that he was seen as a minor player in the scheme of what was going on here, despite the fact he was one of the generals. But, you know, at this point, you know, to learn more about the Elder Gods, you actually have to harvest their memory fragments, which are these little wisps that are there. And, I mean, what can go wrong harvesting the memory fragments of an Elder God, right?
Yeah.
Nothing wrong.
You're fine.
We did that for Master Quest Cape.
Many times.
Oh, yeah.
So you harvest 50 of each memory from the various wisps that are out there. And after that, you talk to Ariane and she channels them into the blank observation, which was the item they said would be useful from Heart of Stone.
Yeah, so along with Ariane, there's two things we haven't seen since Heart of Stone.
Now, my question is, what happens if you hadn't done Heart of Stone and didn't have the blank observation here?
So looking on the wiki here, what it says is, you dimly remember Azanadra giving you an Elder God device of some sort. Oh, that thing, I think I dropped it. And Azanadra just gives it to you there and then.
Okay.
He says, tells you to be more careful with it.
Okay, fair enough. So they just creatively handled that, so it really doesn't matter either way.
Perfect.
And then Ariane channels the 50 of each memory into the blank observation. And is this the point at which the voices in the head start?
Yes, it's after that cutscene, after they teleport.
Okay, let's look at that cutscene then, because we got to talk about this cutscene, because this had some pretty interesting ramifications to it, I feel.
Yes.
Lots of lore confirmed that we were anticipating would make its way into the quest, but ultimately at some point, you know, you just have to kind of hope that what you're looking for will arrive. So I'm just going to have a quick listen to this cutscene, and, you know, as I mentioned, that's why we had spoilers for this quest.
This world was lush once, green and flourishing, a perfect womb for the sleeping gods. Within their shells, they slumbered in a yoke of incredible power. The currents of magic drove more and more energy into the eggs until they reached a bursting point. Sensing the impending birth of their young, the adults pressed in close. With a touch, they imparted their identities and their memories. The eggs burst open and the hatchlings within emerged ravenous. Their mere presence drained all life from the cavern around them. Within moments, every other living thing nearby was dead, drained of all life. Nothing could stop them. The world was doomed. Further and further, their reach expanded, blanketing everything. Minutes later, Frenesque was a desolate husk. The sated hatchlings traveled out into the universe to remake it. In time, they grew old and hid eggs of their own beneath the surface of Gilinor. When they hatch, our world will suffer the same fate as Frenesque. We must stop them. Somehow.
Oof. And there we have a confirmed theory that the eggs are the problem and that they are indeed buried somewhere on Gilinor. And when they hatch, everything is going to end, as was predicted with this.
So what happens if they were to hatch and, like, do we have three generations of Elder Gods now? Like, how does that work?
Well, that comes up later in the quest. There's another cutscene for that, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know if I have that one bookmarked to have a look at, but they do talk about that when we get to the special place for that. And I'm not going to use its actual name because I want to build up to that. But let's just call it the special place for now.
Yes.
Gilinor's special place. Mm-hmm.
So what we've got for now is a confirmation of the way a great revision actually works. Now, this is something I've been thinking about in the context of the Dragonkin, because naturally they escaped the last one somehow. Now, presumably they weren't living on Frenesque at the time, because
no.
Frenesque was subsumed within minutes, hey?
Yeah.
Quite some rapid destruction going on there. So presumably they must have been some further out planet, where they can look from afar and see that things are going rather rapidly south, enough time to get out and get somewhere else.
But my understanding of that is that isn't it the whole universe that has its anima drained at that point, because they have to remake the universe, right?
Hmm. Well, it says every other living thing nearby
okay.
is drained.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Minutes later, Frenesque was a desolate husk. That's enough to sate the hatchlings, apparently, and then they travel out into the universe to remake it. So maybe if you're on one of those outer planets, you're not doomed until the Elder Gods pay you a visit to do over your world.
Okay. So, after this, you're told to go to Falador. And, you know, the whole idea behind this is that, as Anadra suggests, that Ceridoman's crown, otherwise known as the locator, could help in finding the eggs.
Hmm. Interesting idea.
Yeah. Now, okay, I'm going to approach this from two points, because it's at this point that the voices start talking to you in your head, and you know, your character is going, thinks it's going crazy, and you know, it could be the Sliske idea. I did think that was a bit, because it is the whole light and shadow thing, and he does have a mask that was kind of like Sliske's. I don't know, was that could. Do you think that that's implied, or
there's something later on in the quest that really points towards some Sliske involvement here? Yeah.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about. Well, bookmark that for when we get there, because we want to come back.
Hey,
to that.
Lots of bookmarks.
You go back to Falador, because you know the idea is that Sarah Doman's crown, the locator, might help find the eggs, and this is interesting because. It's known before going into this quest that Sarah Doman's crown is an elder artifact, and that's apparently how he ascended. And as a result of that, it's an elder artifact that can be used to find other elder artifacts. And I was thinking at this point, how is something that's going to find elder artifacts going to help us find eggs? And
well,
this was the first red flag for me. This was the first red flag for me. Because it didn't make sense. It did not make sense.
Get all to the slight logical inconsistencies adding up a little, eh?
Yeah. And, I mean, for those of you guys who haven't done the quest and are listening through, you're going to be in for a shock when we get there. But in any case, you continue on to Falador, and at this point you got the voice of good and the voice of bad, light and shadow talking to you inside your head, and you can't avoid us by running away. Hello there. And your character starts just talking into the air. They say it's your conscience, and the dark and the light voice all you know, go back and forth dueling with one another. And these are going to be two characters that do come up frequently in the quest. And will help
bit
you.
Bit of Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, I think. But anyways, you go to Falador Castle and you raise this huge ruckus that, oh, we gotta summon Sarah Doman because the world is ending. And then you effectively get the White Knight run around in Falador Castle because, you know, nobody believes you, and they don't want to. They don't want to bother Sarah Doman because he's
swimming through endless bureaucracy.
Because he's off dealing with saving some other planet or something, and they thought, oh no, we can't bother him for that. So you wind up going through the entire process to summon him yourself, including finding the exact ritual that's needed to summon Sarah Doman to Falador.
Yes, you're stealing that.
Yeah, we stole that from a safe upstairs, I believe, is where it was, right?
Yeah, it helped.
So, at this point, you have Sir Owen with you, who is, of course, a Temple Knight, and not quite as bound by the oath of being a good Sarah Dominist as the White Knights are. So, he's allowed to do things like stealing. That's fine.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody just keep that in your mind about where we're going with that, because that's going to be very, very important later on in the quest. But, you know, you get the blueprints for the plan that is effectively a Slayer bell with the clapper that is cut off, that has been blessed in the waters of the River Selve through the well underneath the Paterdomus. And that's how you build this bell to summon Sarah Doman. You ring it three times, saying Sarah Doman's name, and then Sarah Doman appears.
Mm-hmm. Just something that happens while you're in Paterdomus, dipping the bell in the well in the first place. You've got these two little guards they've added to the game outside the gate. They've got an ongoing little dialogue conversation with the yellow text above the heads. It's really rather amusing. It's both.
Is it related to the quest?
Not really.
Okay.
It's. Yeah, you've got a werewolf and a human guard there just chatting about various silly things, amusing things, and also tiny little hints of what's going on in Mauritania at the time, talking about Vanescula and Ifarate. Oh, I hear they're getting along rather well these days. And of course you go, oh, that's because they're brainwashed by Seren, aren't they?
Yeah. You know, I didn't see that because I went in the other side. I went in from the Canopus side. So, I mean, lots of fun little things that you could pick up along the way. And, you know, keep in mind this is an area that's been in game for since 2004.
Ever.
Yeah, so basically, yeah. Forever. But
yeah, they persist post-quest, by the way, so you still get to hear them, can go back and take a look at their dialogue.
Fascinating.
Yeah, nice addition to the world.
And when you summon Sarah Doman, everybody in the room is, you know, aghast. And what's that guy's name? Not Sir Owen, the other one who was giving us the runaround. What was that?
Father Frith,
yeah.
Right, Father Frith was effectively apologizing for what happened with the interruption to Sarah Doman. And, you know, you effectively tell him that the world's in danger and we need to be concerned about what Saren is doing. We need to find, of course, the Elder God eggs, and ultimately we'd like to use your crown. And he has no problem with this because he says that, you know, hey, this is a situation, and I'm aware that the world can end from this. So, yeah, you were absolutely right to bring me forward on this. So he did get our okay for doing that. And he said he already used his crown to try and look for the eggs, and he was unsuccessful.
So there's an interesting bit of dialogue you have to navigate through. You first have to weave your way through a series of dialogue choices. We've got to say the right thing, or Sarah Doman will immediately dismiss your cause as being unimportant and kick you out of the dialogue, meaning you have to start again. But there's a rather interesting intersection at one point, because for most of these dialogue options, there's one choice out of three that's the right one, and all the others kick you out.
Right.
But for one, where you can choose to tell the truth that you have your doubts about Saren's counsel and you're doing this of your own accord, or you can lie and say that, oh yeah, Saren sent us here. This is all authorized with her. Don't worry. Now, compare this.
I told
with
the truth. That happened.
Aha, so did I, because I remembered something that happened in Sliskay's endgame, where if you lie to Sarah Doman, he immediately calls you out on it. He knows you're lying, and he says, why would you lie to a god of wisdom? But here, if you lie, it gets the same outcome. So that's one where both dialogue options work, and that's rather notable in the context of the other ones. So I can't help but wonder what's happening there. Some people were theorizing that it might be something to do with perhaps Sliskay inside us helping us get a little better at lying.
Okay, that's one way of looking at it. Another way I was potentially thinking of it is that the case in Sliskay's endgame was indeed different than just interacting with Saren or Sarah Doman on any other day of the week. So he might have had just a different heightened level of awareness based on what was happening in Endgame.
Whereas this is casual Sarah Doman,
right? And that's what I was thinking of. So, I don't know.
Well, this is Sarah Doman with bigger fish to fry, right? Like,
yep.
It just doesn't matter at that point. Like, you've got to get the eggs.
It seems quite notable at that point, though, because when you've got, if you say something slightly wrongly, he just immediately dismisses you and kicks you out. But here, well, even the lie works.
That's interesting. And, you know, I just went with the truth because I thought the truth sounded better. And, you know, we weren't helping Saren, or we weren't on there on behalf of Saren.
I feel like Sarah Doman would also be someone to doubt Saren. He has his skepticism of her as voiced in Endgame, among other places.
Yeah. All right. Following from this, it's decided that Sir Owen will help us for the rest of the quest.
Yes, yeah, so
and
that's
this was
just
hint number two. This was hint number two for me that something was up. You know, it's all pointing back to those, you know, pesky Sarah Doman followers. which, you know, we'll get to what exactly that was in a few moments. But after this, we head back to Caradet and visit the Praetorium again and have a discussion on what exactly is going to be done going forward to formulate a plan, because obviously the idea of using the crown won't work, and that was what we initially first tried. So at the Praetorium there, we find Arianne and Azanadra. Sir Owen is also there, and of course with us there as well. It's decided that Sir Owen will continue on the path and find surveillance. Get it? Surveillance? Surveillance.
Hey.
Another one. We were having a fun discussion about all these Temple Knight names in pre-show. Well, yeah, because you know you need a British accent to make it sound right.
Certification.
Yeah, certification is how I always said it. But
cashew.
Yeah.
Cashew. Oh, dear.
Arianne and Azanadra will examine the mouthpieces. That's the automatons, right?
No. So do you remember Heart of Stone? You were going around to all these different locations. And
Okay.
And the little mouthpieces. Big old statues, basically. Hey. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I gotta go check something after the quest in that case then. And Sir Owen, I already mentioned what Sir Owen will do. And then our path, of course, being your character and Trindine. Yet again, Trindine wants to go on the most impressive adventure because reasons. You have to go investigate the Hall of Memories. The Tsar Volcano and the Wizard's Tower to see if you can find any conclusion, let's say, or any solution to the problem.
A few very specific places.
Very specific locations. I want to start with the Hall of Memories.
Okay.
Because what order did you do them in? I feel we should ask with that.
Yeah, so when I was doing this on the live stream, we were kind of gently nudged to do the Hall of Memories one last to preserve the biggest impact.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You can do it in any order. There's effectively no difference. But yeah, the Tsar one it's interesting, as is the Wizard's Tower. That's pretty minor in the scale of things. But the Hall of Memories one is pretty impactful, if not in the ways you're expecting.
Yeah, I went there first. I then went to the Tsar one. Then I went to the Wizard's Tower last. So the Hall of Memories, of course, is that divination training method that everybody two-ticks in the Piscatoris area.
I'm chanting for Daddy Chris.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in doing this, you effectively reset the archivist, and what happens with this is that after you gather all of the memories after first resetting the archivist, there's another set of memories to gather, and then you place them on some plinths that are at the back of the room. And after you place them down, there will be this memory bud in the center of the room that opens up and offers you a restricted engram.
Interesting. Hey?
And to get anything out of the restricted engram, you got to go back upstairs and use it on what did you have to use it on out there? The fountain of energy. That's what it was. And this is a huge monologue from Guthix.
Surprise voice acting.
Yeah.
Yay.
This is, I think, what made the quest for me. And you can say, you know, this whole everything that's happening with Trindine and Azanadra and Zaros, of course, because he's going to be involved in this. You can, of course, point to all of that. But I think this is the thing we have to focus on for this quest. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it goes on for a while, and I'm not.
I'm on the wiki transcript here, and it's just an entire wall of text that takes up my whole screen.
Yeah. I'm not sure how long the. Yeah, this is a 5 minute long audio clip, so I'm not gonna play that. But this is something you don't want to spacebar through. And the reason I think this is so important for what's happening going forward is I think that this is our way out of this situation. And the important bit is that everything that you experience with this restricted engram, nobody else is aware of. Trindine's not aware of it. Asen Andra's not aware of it. Not even Ariane. And you know, all through the quest, your character doesn't tell anyone about it. But there's one.
It can't be used against you.
I'm sorry. What was that?
It can't be used against you.
No. And there's this one passage that really stood out for me, and this is Guthix talking about creating the World Guardian and how he used Shadow Anima to do this. And this was the theory we had at the end of Desperate Measures. It was, I think it was postulated by both Diana and Earth, so this has been confirmed, that Shadow Anima was used to create yourself, the World Guardian. And of course, that's why you weren't impacted by it in the past. But the interesting part is that in talking about it, the part of the Engram says that their soul would adapt to it. That is, of course, the Shadow Anima. It would not be without benefit to them. They would become resistant to the powers of the other gods, immune to the loyalty auras of Saren and Zaros, and they would also find themselves protected from the Shadow Anima and its aberrant nature. Once part of them, their soul would adapt and change, absorbing Anima and Shadow Anima alike, growing slowly in power and preparing itself for the task ahead. Indeed, they would find themselves connected to the power they would never expect. They would be in constant connection with the Codex. Of course, that's the monolith from the archaeology skill. Absorbing the Shadow Anima in a steady flow, even as they absorb the flow of Anima around them. Its powers could enhance them, strengthen them, and prepare them for the trials ahead. And of course, the trials ahead is the important bit. And what this tells me is that everything that we saw in the Sliske arc was set up by Guthix. And it's even said in the Engram that it was, in effect, a lure by Guthix to bring Sliske forward, have him stab him with the Staff of Armadil, so that he could create the World Guardian, and Sliske would take an interest in the World Guardian because of the Shadow Anima. And in doing so, this would build the Guardian up, the World Guardian up, for the trials ahead. So this effectively confirms that everything in the Sliske arc was intended by Guthix to build us as a World Guardian. And the important bit I come back to is the trials ahead. And what I'm not sure of is that if this power that we've absorbed could, in effect, act as a lightning rod for the energy that's going to come out if these Elder God eggs hatch.
Yeah.
What if it is... What if this is, because, you know, I think we're going to be on this path where we're going to try all these things and they're not going to work. And the gods are going to start fighting with one another. And you're going to eventually going to have the eggs start to hatch. And what is the only force that might stand to stop it? That's the World Guardian. Hence the name, right?
What we'd be building up to is that of all the things that people can try, it's actually us and our nature. And that Guthix is prepared for this, of course.
Exactly.
He's been so connected to the Anima all this time. He's had to have known what was going on.
Yeah. And I think it was even said in the Engram that he knew that the next revision was close.
Mm-hmm. So we are his master play.
Yeah. And he said he couldn't protect his own race in life, so perhaps he could protect Yelanor in death.
A couple things I want to bring up here.
Yeah.
level is the connection to the Codex. We are constantly connected to the Codex and getting our constant shadow anima from that, a bit of a top-up, and that's kept in balance by the anima we draw from the world. Now, I'm thinking if, as you say, we are the ones who absorb all the anima that is hatched with the Elder Eggs, then, well, we might have to be putting a lot of strain on the Codex in the process, hey?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the natural conclusion that would come to this at the end of all this is that the World Guardian's powers are no more. The Elder artifacts are destroyed. And all the gods, so to speak, have their powers completely drained. Or, you know, drained in a way that would render them, you know, not that much of a threat. And, you know, I also...
Like they were an endgame, hey?
Yeah. Like, I could also see a potential ending that where Saren winds up shattering herself again. Maybe Zaros winds up dead.
The godless win again.
Yeah. And like I think that's where this is all going.
Well, can we at least, like, acknowledge that little anagram fixed the only thing that I didn't really like with the World Wakes and the whole Saliske arc? Like, Saliske didn't come up with this. He didn't do it. This was suicide by Saliske.
Yeah.
That fixes things for me.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot. Because it just never made sense that you could do that to Guthix. You know, I mean, it just... this really, like, shored up a lot of the story for me.
Yeah, and that's why I said this is the most important part of this quest, and your character keeps it to themselves.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up was on the Saliske side of things, because effectively the player is keeping it to themselves. That's not quite true, because there's, of course, Saliske in the know as well, both taking a ride and having had some awareness of this
right
from the beginning, because in Desperate Times there is a little bit of dialogue where Guthix lets him in on at least something, that he has to die and it has to be by Sliske's hand. It's not entirely
right
clear how much Sliske knows, though, because it does cut off. But yeah, and so...
And we don't know how much influence Sliske has inside of you today.
Oh, yeah. So the World Guardian and Sliske both... two parts of this plan at first, and now we're in the same boat, the same body even. And it's interesting that the World Guardian is this balance of light and shadow anima, when of course you've got the light and shadow masks. So I can't help but wonder, whatever there is of Saliske inside us, is it perhaps channeled through those twin sources of anima? And that's how we experience them as different masks.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable explanation.
Whoa. We're the chosen one. We are the chosen one. We have true balance.
It's kind of like how there's the Dark Lord bit in the elf storyline. What that turned out to be. It's kind of like that same idea. I see it as. Anything else on the Engram?
I mean, not really,
like,
but
we could talk a lot. We could do an entire podcast on that Engram if we wanted to. And
we should
do a Lore Diggers on that.
Yes. Can I talk about Trindine for a bit
here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you get a little bit of dialogue here where you have small talk while you're waiting for this one memory bot to charge up. And you talk to her about various things,
right,
one of which is what she thinks of Zaros.
Yeah.
And she's not actually that hot on him overall. It's like, let me see. So, small talk. Yeah. So, she's not particularly devout, apparently. So, Azzy's, of course, extremely religious about it. But as for her, she's just serving him for the sake of it. Back during the Empire, things were better when everything was under control. So, serving Zaros because he creates the best world for her. And she also says the Majra are my friends, my people, and what's the alternative? Become a human? Call myself Inner Dirt? But yeah. And so she's not actually that attached to Zaros as a person, which I think is rather interesting and could even be relevant in whatever's coming up for her, because I think she's probably going to stick around and be a major recurring character here.
Yeah.
She also has some dialogue when she's undercover at the White Knight's castle with Sir Owen. She says, "Oh, absolutely. There's nothing better than knowing your boss has a direct line to an absent god. Really comforting."
Well, perhaps that's why they never freed her.
Oh, only now that she's useful, hey?
Yeah. I mean, that'd be rather unfortunate, but I mean, it would fit the MO of what we're talking about.
Yeah. Zaros, in general, only cares to people for as much as they're useful to
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Mm. All right. We could talk forever about the Engrim, but we're going to move on. I next went to the Tsar Volcano, and, you know, this one, not too much to report here. There's a little bit of a discussion that happened in the library, and you reunite with your old friend Gaul. That was fun to see that little guy again.
Yeah.
But the ending of this one is that the Tsar definitely know where the Elder Halls of Gilinar are, but we're deemed as not worthy, so they're not going to tell us. And of course, we need to remember that the kiln here is indeed an Elder artifact as well.
So there's something that's been happening with the Tokar here.
Yeah. And these guys have, of course, a very close relationship to Full as well, which goes without saying.
Closer than ever now.
Yeah.
Full has apparently returned to swim in the sacred lava, and the Tokar are down there merrily swimming along with her. And now they're trying to get the Tsar to come back in as well. Except the Tsar have... Well, the entire point of them is that they left the Elder Kiln and decided to be individuals. And so they have individual personalities as opposed to Tokar Hawk here, who is actually just a hive mind of all the Tokar.
It's kind of like the changelings on DS9.
Oh, yeah.
The Great Link.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So you've got your Odos, who are the Tsar. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and you can chat to a couple of them talking about some rather philosophical questions. You have an option here where your two options to tell this one Tsar are, if you surrender yourself, you no longer exist. What good is purpose then? Or you can say, without purpose, existence is meaningless.
Ooh.
If you can find purpose, you should. So this doesn't really serve any point purpose in as far as progressing the quest goes, but it's a nice little aside to just tie into the greater themes of the quest and to give you a moment to pause and philosophize, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's, strong ongoing things of individuality versus purpose above all. I think purpose above all else is definitely the Azanadra standpoint, where you have to follow this god because they know what's right, and what's right has to be the way.
And these guys are definitely going to feature in the next quest in this series, I think. They have to, I think.
Well, we're going down an Elder Artifact theme, hey?
Yeah, I think so. And then after that, you head to the Wizard's Tower, which you go with Trindine, and you have to, of course, vouch for Trindine, which has its own set of side effects because, there's a Majorat here, and let's just be careful. You'll see what she winds up doing after the fact. Goes by the name of Wizard Trindy, of course. Fun little name. You guys search some books, and nothing of value found here.
Apparently so, anyway.
Yeah.
I kept going through saying, oh yeah, I trust Trindine. But I was just so taken in her by her. She's a really fun character.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad they're
probably not someone you should be trusting, though.
I'm glad they're doing lots with her. After this, we head back to the Praetorium yet again in Caradeft and have a chat about what exactly has been going on with this one. And we get there, and Ariane is on the floor, out cold.
Oh, God. You've been doing this on Quest stream.
I absolutely...
And there were 5 minutes where everyone was just turning up bit by bit and going, oh, Ariane is... unconscious. What's up with her? What happened?
I burst out laughing. His character says, what did you do to her?
And we were really worried. But no, what she's done is... So she and Azanadra went to chat to these mouthpieces, the Kra, and instead of... Well, they didn't get answers from them, so what Ariane decided to do was destroy the statues, crush them all up, turn them into a gaseous mixture, and inhale them. That's a very Ariane thing to do, isn't it?
I just found that too funny.
So we were worried all this time, and nope, she's just a bit of a tunnel vision researcher, hey?
That was perfect. Perfect. But it wasn't for nothing, though. She was able to find out the location of Gilenor's Elder Halls.
That's the funniest bit, I feel, the fact that she just went and vaped these ancient statues and it actually worked.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Oh, God. And it turns out that she found the Elder Halls and eggs to be in the heart. And we knew this before, that this is where they were going to be. You guys remember the cutscene from Desperate Times? They said that the Elder Gods laid their eggs in Gilenor's heart.
Oh. We should have really taken that literally, shouldn't we?
I did.
Congratulations, Shane. You are vindicated.
Yeah, the reason I remember that so well is because I did that little preview commercial for Desperate Measures last summer, and that was one of the sound bits that I included in there. And you know, you go down to the heart, and you know, it's she's like, no, we don't have to go far. There's that little interaction, of course, between Hellweir and Grigorovic and whatnot, and you know, for a second here we're thinking that something might spawn and you might have to do some fighting, but no. And this is another thing I mentioned in the quest, that there's no fighting
this
at all in it.
Is where Sliske comes in.
Yep, the shadow voice.
Mm-hmm. So they start talking about this singing all of a sudden. That singing, that beautiful singing. Actually, I do hear it. It's awful. And they summon whoever this singer is in their direction. And suddenly Grigorovic pops up from the ground. Mm-hmm. And the shadow voice says, hey, idiot, if you can hear us, we need to get past this dog. And so Hellwit, nope. Grigorovic, who is calling someone master for some reason, starts providing a very effective distraction, just taunting Hellweir about his son. And that draws them all away. Some more God Wars 2 fighting going on there in the distance, leaving you clear to get to these eggs. But yeah, so...
On my playthrough, I underestimated the... impact of Sliske on that, and you know, looking back on it, you're right. That is a big thing, especially. Hey, master.
Mm-hmm. I think I went through about five different ideas of what was actually happening during this cutscene. At first, I thought the singing was the heart of Gilenor itself, or something, and they were responding to the anima being light and shadow anima. But apparently not. It was just Greg.
Yeah. All right. And then Ariane says, yeah, you know, we might need some lava for this, but oh, a lava rune will be good enough. And then
fortunately, she provides it for
us. Yeah, and then you head straight on down, and you get to examine each of the eggs down there. And you see that Wen's egg exists, Fol's egg exists, and of course, Bix's egg exists. And the eggs are slightly active. They're not quite hatching just yet, but they have, been disturbed.
This was our one music track in the quest. I think what they did here, as opposed to somewhere like Desperate Measures, is they went really heavy on the different characters involved, the dialogue involved, at the price of bespoke graphics and bespoke music.
That's
fine. That's okay.
Yeah, it was absolutely fine. I didn't miss it. I was so focused on the reading that actually, the only time I heard the music was when the new track actually started at this area. So
yeah.
I think that was
fun. It's a remix of Elder Halls, I think, and it's a really effective one.
Yeah.
A bit chilling.
And through our examination of the eggs, we find that the only thing that will really trigger them at this point going forward is either a god dying or an outburst of shadow energy that would kick this all off.
There was another one, wasn't there? The destruction of an elder artifact.
Oh, yeah, right. That one. Right. But that... Mm-hmm. Didn't that happen with the needle? Didn't the needle get destroyed?
The needle did not get destroyed. No, the needle is bound to Karapak now.
Oh, okay.
And I think they were saying specifically it had to be outside this place in order to...
To have an impact,
Yeah. So player says, so we should avoid killing any gods in this chamber. Yep.
Or just anywhere, really, at this point. Because I think that's a general sentiment, is that you kill a god anywhere, it's going to, you know, of course, cause a problem, right?
Maybe.
So, better safe
than sorry.
My godless instincts disagree, but go on.
Yeah, better safe than
sorry. You think one's going
to get it? Oh.
You know,
going to kill off another god.
For a while, I thought I was going to be Sarah Doman, and we're almost at that point.
That's what we were thinking on the stream.
Yeah. So after this, you head back to Karadat, and you find that everybody's left, and they're nowhere to be found.
Yes.
Which is a bit suspect because you have just uncovered the core mystery of this quest. Mm-hmm. And
light and shadow are kicking up a fuss.
And going forward, the voices in your head, they definitely want you to do something with this. And what you wind up doing is you just go near one of the pylons, the huge pylons in Karadat, and you're charged with shadow energy, which of course would kill anybody else. And you just go near any of the shadow anchors and it activates the shadow mode that you get when you're give enough pylon batteries to it when you're training archaeology there, and that allows you to find Trindine's memories that you gather like you gathered the memories of the elder gods on Frenisque. And go ahead.
It's interesting that you can actually interpret this yourself instead of, say, like, remember the Majorat Memories mini quest? You gave it to Karshai to interpret. When you did this, the same thing, you gave it to with Trindine in the Vault of Shadows, you gave it to Azanadra to interpret. But here, you are able to interpret it yourself.
I think that's because we have the blank observation, right?
But you generally had to hand that to Ariane in this quest. Here, though, it says, Light Voice is saying, can anyone read them? Shadow Voice, you can, imbecile. Light Voice, oh, that's right. Okay, press the thingy against your forehead and let's see what's in there. So you can actually pass this now, well, thanks to Light Voice, apparently.
That's an interesting implication. Mm-hmm. But
Maybe some Majorat power that's been passed on to you.
Yeah. Lots of weird shadowy stuff with that. Following from that, you're told to return to the three places you visit to, see if there's any sign of Trindine or what might have actually happened with that when you return to the Wizard's Tower, that find out that Trindine stole the book.
She stole a book! A heinous crime.
Reasons.
The book was about the crown, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What did she do in into Tsar City again?
She went to the library and she was chatting to Gull, that one Gull a bit. Let me see.
Oh, you're right about Elder artifacts.
Ah, yeah.
And then after that, you go back to the Hall of Memories and learn that yet again, she was looking for information about the crown.
Yes, she was, funnily enough. And she has deleted that memory after accessing it, meaning you can't. Yeah.
And when you trip the alarm system with the archivist, your player yells, "Stop the count!
Oh, God.
Stop the count!"
Well, no.
You can if you want to. You can also, like, there's a lot of options there. I think this was earlier on in the quest, Shane. You're skipping.
No, the stop the count was at the second bit of the Hall
of Memories. No, I swear it was with Trindine.
No.
Like, you have to, because it's recognizing Trindine as an intruder, and basically what you have to do is make the bot stop so you can rewrite things to recognize her.
I thought it was at the end.
Well, but yeah, one of the other things you can say is, "If I can hold, you can hold," which is a reference to the GameStop thing that's been happening and is still happening. So we were chatting with Mod Jack on the stream and, yep, he confirmed as much. Pretty quick turnaround to get a reference in there, huh?
Yeah, I bet this is where the M&M one came from.
Yeah, probably. Oh, dear.
Oh, you're right. It was in the first one where you could say stop the count. Oh, I enjoyed that little bit of dialogue.
This statement is a lie.
Yeah, exactly. I'm wondering what the M&M lyric was now. That would have been in there at that point. Because I don't think the Tsar would speak M&M.
Speak M&M as if it's a language thing.
Right?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, decode the arcane language of the Tsar.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
What's this about the real Slim Shady? Will the real Slim Shady please stand up?
He's a rap god.
Oh. Where were we?
Returning to the outer halls under the heart.
Right, okay. And then you fill Ariadne in on everything that was happening. Oh my god, that dialogue. Both in terms of what could have been there, what was there, and what was there in the past. Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Oh boy.
Okay, you talk to Ariadne and she uses the magic and blank observation, her magic and blank observation device to find Trindine because, of course, Trindine's memories are part of the blank observation. And this gives us a cutscene. And is this the cutscene everybody been waiting for, I wonder?
Here we go.
So, you're given this cutscene underground. Well, I don't know if it was underground. It looked like it was in a basement-y kind of office here.
Some unspecified location, which seems to have been bashed together from a bunch of different graphics kits, a lot of which doesn't seem to have had its interaction options removed. So, for instance, you had a flopping fish in the background, which you could mouse over, and it gave you an option to fish the fish. Fish.
Nice.
So, that was an interesting thing to hear in the background all through this very impactful cutscene.
But you find Sir Owen, Sir Opticus. What is that one? Sir Opticus? What's that?
Surreptitious.
Surreptitious becomes Trindine.
That's Trindine's design.
And Sir Valance appears. And they start having this discussion about, you know, the Dark Lord and this costume, and you find out that Surveillance is I'm going to butcher this name. Valianus?
Oh boy.
The demon.
Valianus. Looks like.
Okay. And you find out that this demon has been wanting to effectively pull the strings of the Temple Knights for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. And you get the biggest revelation of them all. That in his boredom, what he has been doing is embedding puns into Asgardian lineages. Just this absolute RuneScape institution. Mm-hmm. And there it is, the lore we never knew we needed.
That's where the puns come from.
The origin, the backstory, the deepest lore.
But there's more. They also have ties to the Zarosian forces.
Yes. So this is where archaeology lore comes in. Mm-hmm. Now, you have all been discussing about the writing on the walls mystery for quite some time on this podcast, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been bouncing back and forth trying to figure that damn thing out, what it means.
Oh, yeah. So I've had my own thing cooking away in the background based on the Temple Knights having originally been a Zarosian organization.
Which is confirmed here.
Mm-hmm. Ostensibly working for Saradomin the present day, but, well, as Valinius says here, once they reach the final stage of their initiation, they get informed that they don't actually work for Saradomin at all. Now, they don't know who their true master is at this stage, but, well, yeah, that's something they have their potential to work out, and that's something that's a bombshell they're planning to drop very, very soon at this point.
Let's talk.
So you've had this. Oh.
Sorry, continue.
So you've had this shady organization behind the scenes.
Okay, you're going exactly where I wanted you to go, carry on.
Cool. Doing all the shady Temple Knight activities, but all with Zarosian at the head of it. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just go to the Writing on the Walls mystery text. Hold on.
Yeah, and keep in mind, the Writing on the Walls is a mystery that you get after getting 99 Archaeology and getting the Master Archaeology outfit. And it's one that has data scrawled across the various four dig sites out there. And it talks of this organization that spans time and can, you know, effectively appear and disappear at will. And we didn't exactly know what we were talking about back mm-hmm. then. And, you know, when you put the Zarosia lens on it, that makes sense. But there's more that also ties them to the Temple Knights, which I'll let you fill in from the Writing on the Walls.
Yes. So the mystery begins at Caradet. You find the first bit of text, which is, this is where they began, surviving remnants of the Inquisition. They lived among their enemies, vying for power and status. Their leader is unknown to us. Their agents thwart us at every turn. Even what little we know came at a cost. Of course, we do appear to know their leader now. He's Surveillance/Valinius right in front of us at this cutscene. And yeah, they lived among their enemies because, of course, the Zarosians were wiped out very deliberately. So, of course, they've been forced to go undercover.
And living amongst their enemies, what better thing than posing as forces of Saradomin?
Indeed. Next, you go to the Infernal Source, where apparently the cult taught them how to blend into the shadows, not just to survive, but to thrive, to bribe and coerce, to puppet leaders. While their methods appear nefarious, there is evidence of them being used for good, yet their goals remain inscrutable to us. And so they apparently learned something from the Zamorakians in the process.
And talking about this with the lens of the Temple Knights and thinking back to the Temple Knights quest, it makes so much sense.
How so?
Well, I mean, if you just go back to, say, I think it was the quest where you go through the Temple Knight training, the various themes that you just touched on from the source, I think were pretty much the same themes that were brought forward in the Temple Knight training quest.
Yes, all sorts of various trickery, hey?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Everlight is where it really clicked of being the Temple Knights for me. So here, they learned to walk in the light, to manipulate the events of history in their favor, and to benefit from such. They seek to control the narrative of the past, present, and future. They stand among us, hidden in plain sight. Now, walk in the light, that's what I'm thinking refers to them ostensibly converting to Saradominism.
Yeah. At Everlight, of course. Or around there, right? So
yeah, and essentially legitimizing themselves. Look, guys, we're not Zerosian at all anymore. And what even happens in the cutscene in this quest is that they say they imprisoned Nex of their own accord just to prove, like, we're good guys. Sacrificing one of their own in the process, or at least imprisoning her.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Stormguard Citadel. They stole power from everywhere, confiscated and hoarded it, much like in the Inquisition, but rarely used it lest they give away their existence. With it, they have done both good and ill, saved lives, killed tyrants, but they seek not justice. Their aims are their own. You should not trust them. So there's the question of trust again, and...
Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm. And the notion of purpose, like what they're trying to get at. Here it appears that you've got Vilnius talking about waiting on orders, essentially, and just messing around in the meantime. So, while apparently this stuff is essentially harmless as embedding puns into Exnanian languages.
Yeah, it can go further.
Also, yeah. While just on the side, toppling tyrants, saving lives. Whatever he felt like doing, I guess. And the final one is at Warforge. They are neither war nor peace, order nor chaos. They are what falls between the cracks. The power behind the throne. The silent watchers. They are the silhouette that, once seen, cannot be unseen. They are the shadows of the Empire. Their eyes are upon you, player. Be vigilant.
And that's another Temple Knights theme.
Yes. So the power behind the crone. Behind the throne. You've got King Valance, who was apparently the King of Falador, but mysteriously unseen for a good while now. And, well, Valinius here apparently mentions something about... implies that he deposed of him in some way, disposed of him. And you've also got, they are the shadows of the Empire. They are what remains of the Zerosian Empire, hey?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Makes total sense, I think. And
the power behind the throne of Falador.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, of course, big reveal number two that I think makes the quest. And, you know, if you combine it down to the restricted engram and this, you have a quest on it on its own. And the rest is, you know, effectively just advancing the plot forward. But this just moves so many key pieces forward on that. Are we ready to move on to the Falador bit in conclusion here? You have anything else?
I do want to talk about Sir Owen here.
Okay.
Because he essentially has the anti-Azanadra mindset. So Azanadra, his whole belief is that Zaras is worth following because he is a god. Simple as that. And that anything he does or tells you to do is right simply by virtue of his godhood, that sets him apart in some way. And now Trindine and Valinius here are trying to convert him to Zerosianism, because, hey, you've been working for a Zerosian organization all along. May as well. Easy choice to make. But Sir Owen is arguing against that, and quite comprehensively, too. So what he says is that, do you even know what Zaras is planning? No. Then how can you know that what you're doing is right? Yes, Saradomin has made mistakes. I'm sure he will again. He doesn't need the moral authority of a god to be a leader who wants what is best for his people. He doesn't need to be right all the time to be right. And when the alternative is an ancient manipulative deceiver, I know where my loyalties lie. And seeing this, seeing you two, I'm more convinced than ever.
Basically, gods don't make mistakes, so I follow.
Mm-hmm. So, Saradomin is someone who is flawed, someone who is essentially more mortal than someone like Zaras. But even still, it's just acknowledging the fact that gods can make mistakes, and yet you follow them because you want to, and you follow them for what is right, and yeah, for knowing that they want the best and for agreeing with their plans, not just for the sake of them being a god.
And that has so many parallels to real life too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not blind faith.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think Owen has quite actually developed a fair bit as a character, because I remember The Death of Chivalry, his first real quest appearance. Saradomin appears in front of him and he's immediately kneeling and groveling and panicking about not polishing his armor. Whereas here, he appears to have developed a much more nuanced mindset in the process, presumably through having been through The Death of Chivalry and the sequel quest, which might come out someday. But yeah, and having worked directly with Saradomin and knowing that he doesn't always get it right, he brought Owen himself back with a corrupted arm simply because he is not entirely pure and good. He does make mistakes and he is more nuanced than a simply good or evil, right or wrong view of the world. And yet he has made peace with that. He accepts it and he knows it's the way the world functions and he's not about to abandon it for the concept of someone doing right all the time.
You know, that thinking about that, I think that opens up a big door for what could be Death of Chivalry 2, and everybody, and this is something we, you know, talked about last week, as they said that this takes place after a hypothetical Death of Chivalry 2, and, you know, they're not necessarily going to make that quest, but they know what would happen in it if they did, and I think everything you've just said would be, you know, fun things to explore in that quest. It's nice to see those things kind of coming through, despite the fact we didn't actually get Death of Chivalry 2.
Yeah, we've got the themes running, and I'd love to see more of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I will say also that the specific book that Trindine stole from the Wizard's Tower Library was about apparently an alleged time in history when Saradomin lost his crown and lost his godhood, and they're talking about whether that's literal or metaphorical. And I think what the conclusion I've come to is that it doesn't actually matter whether it's literal or metaphorical, because unless you're just ranking them on a tier of power level or something like that, then really what matters is who follows this god, who believes in them, and who is willing to further their plans, not just is this a tier 2 god, is this a tier 3 god, or something like that.
But the idea of divine energy and divine power with that also has to, of course, come in. And, you know, I think from the mythology perspective as well, that's a fine way of looking at it.
Yeah. As there's the sheer metaphysical aspect, exactly. And there's the social.
Exactly. And, you know, after this, we get back out to Falador and, you know, we learn so much in that cutscene and we find yet again that Saradomin was inspecting the troops at this time, and this is when things really start to go awry out there.
So this is an old ceremony that they've specifically nudged Saradomin into bringing back as a way to honor the troops. And, well, as a way to gather everyone into one place all at once. Prime time for some mischief.
Yeah, I thought someone, you know, when I saw everyone gathering going in here and after just finishing this cutscene, I thought somebody's going to get assassinated from, you know, a sniper up on the roof or something, right?
Yeah, so what Trindine and Vilinius were planning was to use the Frostenhorn, which is another really old bit of content that they're bringing back from Temple of Sintistan. Way back in 2011, I think, 2012, one of those years.
I think it was before that. I think it was closer to 2009.
2009?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Trindine casually mentions that Pontimax grabbed them the Frostenhorn from Gorok, which of course we did in person, and brought it to him. And now it's finally finding a use to basically, well, bring out whatever Zerosian aura is there and ignite it in the hearts and minds of the Temple Knights. Turn them towards Zaros for good.
Which,
now that they've been primed,
is, of course, the huge reveal of the quest, and you know, mm-hmm. nobody. I don't think even the rank and file Temple Knight probably knew about this. Would a normal Temple Knight know about this? I don't think so. Right?
I don't think so. Owen certainly didn't.
Owen did.
Owen apparently never got that far.
Yeah. Did you interrupt the ritual or let it continue?
I interrupted
okay,
it.
Okay, me too.
Yeah. My alignment always has been just generally not Zaros. That's how I define it. Anything but Zaros.
Yeah, and you know, Sarah Doman says that they would have been aware of such an infiltration by Zaros, but they didn't detect anything.
Apparently not.
But something... then, moments later, Zaros actually appears.
Yes, something interesting is that the plan failed. The Frostenhorn did not work. They actually needed Zaros there in person in order to transmit the aura directly and bow over all those malleable Temple Knight minds in his direction.
And the whole reason that Zaros is there is a huge plot that Azanadra is, of course, involved in. And as you probably guessed by this point, Trindine is involved in. Let's steal Sarah Doman's crown.
Woohoo!
Because they feel that this will make him nothing. And my bet is that he just wants the crown to find elder artifacts. Because he has an obsession with them. He's interested in the codex, and the ones he's not aware of, I'm sure he wants to find the location of.
He was interested in the Stone of Jazz, very interested. Invested enough to make a deal with all the gods involved in Endgame to make sure he could get his hands on it. Though that kind of blew up very shortly afterwards and made that a moot point. But yeah, I wonder if this is how they're going to tie Carapac back into the storyline eventually.
Yeah, because I mean, that's Carapac, the needle, which is one of the most powerful.
He also presumably still has the mirror.
Yep.
Because he was the one last seen with that in Endgame, using it to blow up the Stone of Jazz.
Where's the Staff of Armadil?
I think Carapac still has that as well. He's got quite a collection going himself.
Yeah, so...
They're rival collectors.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously Carapac has to come into this some way. And from what we're able to tell, the Elder Gods were able to bind... Jazz was able to bind Carapac to the needle in... Desperate Measures, and we don't know exactly where that would be, which makes sense, I think, of what Zaros' end goal here was to, of course, get the crown.
Yeah, but if you're going to get the needle as well, Carapac comes part and parcel with that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
And, you know, after this, he steals the crown, and there's, of course, a big question about if Sarah Doman will be able to continue. Sarah Mick feels as though that this is partially his fault for letting something like that happen. But Sarah Doman actually takes it in good stride, I feel.
Mm-hmm. He has a moment of lapsing, a moment of angry outburst, a very human moment, eh?
Yeah.
But then he finally manages to rein it in, realize that, no, this was his fault, this was his oversight, and if anyone should be taking the blame here, it really should be him. And he sort of buckles up, makes a commitment. He declares to the remaining faithful that they are all the better for remaining by his side, even in the wake of all this. And... yeah, and he makes a commitment to go on to get the crown back, to get his knights back, and let me see, there's a good line he has here.
And when you start doing all that, it really would start, you know, realigning everything so that the Temple Knights do turn out to be exactly, well, not exactly, but almost more in line of what we were promised that they would be.
Mm-hmm. So what Sarah Doman says, if you see your friends, tell them I will protect Gilenor. Zaros has no love for its people.
So Sarah Doman positioning himself, of course, for a power play. And, you know, of the gods that are left, he probably has, aside from Zaros and Saren, probably the most influence and power to do something.
He has
like
a strong following,
yeah. Yeah.
He has vast swathes of the human kingdoms, even if he has lost one of his major, major forces in the process. And yeah. And I think this really has been a massive shift in power. Sarad-Omen is, I wouldn't quite say an underdog, because he's still in that position of power.
Right, and the question also, I think, that needs to be asked with this is that, you know, we go to that good old godhood tier. Does he go down a tier after because of this, or, you know, start to slip down because he doesn't have the crown?
That's where it comes into play, where how literal was that book?
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, and we'll have to see about that. But for now, in the social aspect, he still has massive swathes of Gyllenor answering to him.
I mean, from a believer standpoint, that's really all you need.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But he's been humbled now. He's been brought down to more of a mortal standpoint, I feel. And as a general godless loving type, a general mortals over gods type, I think I prefer Sarad-Omen as a god to a lot of the other gods, because he does, to some extent, have that mortal standpoint. He's become distanced from it a lot over the many, many, many years he's been around. He's older than Guthix, for one.
Yeah.
But this is a great moment to take him down a notch from that position of absolute power to not quite knowing where he stands. And it's like how he was made vulnerable in Endgame. He had the time to self-reflect. Here he gets the time to reflect again and come back as a very different kind of leader.
Okay. And then the only thing left to do is, yeah, let's go just confront Azanadra Trindine.
Oh boy.
And the folks at Caradet, and you know, you get there. And
it's really rather sinister as you go in. You've got a various temple knights scattered around the place. You've got Evocation, last seen in Salt in the Wound. She has gone full throttle into Zaros mode now. Even as her uncle, I think, her uncle Certification has not. Yeah, so she's there. You examine the temple knights scattered around, and it says something along the lines of fiercely loyal to their god, which is just a bitingly bit of ironic examine text.
And they're all there now. And you know, there's a bit of a brief discussion about the eggs. Aro says, you know, you are concerned about them hatching. They're stable for now. Concern yourself with my instructions.
Mm-hmm. So they are running off to specifically the monolith, the codex.
And they want to attack around there.
Yes, they want to claim it. This is why I think Zaros needs an army, because that was one of the twin prongs of his assault here. He wanted the crown, but he also wanted his knights back. And so if they're going to charge into the heart of Mystalin and take this codex in the middle of a dig site, then they're going to have to defend it. And that's what I think the Temple Knights are going to help with.
Interesting. And, you know, it also raises the question, why was he so interested about it when archaeology first started? And I think that's the next question that's going to be answered with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that hunt for elder artifacts. And, you know, I think that's a very generous way of putting it. But Trindine and Azanadra, of course, leave to side with Zaros, and Arianne declines, and saying that, you know, that's not her fight, and she's interested in her own, making her own way. And we both agree to not do anything to disturb the eggs, and that's quest complete.
We have a bit of a teaser for what's coming next, for what it's worth. Despite what Zaros says, I don't believe the threat is gone, says Arianne.
No.
There must be some researchers I can work with. Maybe I'll quietly contact Rildo.
Ah, yes.
Player says, yes, I worked with inverted commas Rildo recently. He can be trusted. So that's how we're tying him back in. Nice stage whisper.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
So that's linking the Desperate Measures strand back in.
That's
coming back together.
That's a quest. That's a quest.
That sure is a quest, isn't it?
So we need to not understate how impactful this was from a lore perspective, from a power change perspective, from just, you know, effectively flipping the table and advancing the storyline forward. Yes, absolutely. It does that. But, you know, I wasn't sure what to think about this after finishing it. And our discussion on it, I think, has helped a bit. But I don't know. I always expect maybe just a tiny, tiny bit more, maybe a little bit of interactivity with a puzzle or a little mini game.
Quests over just reading, hey.
Exactly. Kind of like even just a little interactive kind of thing like we had in the Heartstealer quest, for example. Yeah. There
this
was
does
no
not
combat.
Have the same massive set pieces as Desperate Measures had, like the tower defense or the lab escape.
Yeah, and I don't think you needed all of that, but, you know, just a tiny bit to take you away from that reading on that. And, you know, I'm not sure that it's a negative for the quest. It's just something that felt different for me, and I'm not
sure.
It's
a different type of quest.
And I'm not sure how I feel about it personally. But it's a good quest, you know, just with everything that it does and impacts.
Yeah. I think I was saying this is where the subtle distinction between a quest player and a lore player comes in.
Right.
Yeah, of course, a lore player is probably going to appreciate this. Like,
because it's just
heartily.
Like going to read a lore Bible, right?
Yeah, pretty
much. Which, I mean, is fine. Mm-hmm. And I think
you've got big old things that I've got to
many people
recontextualize.
Would be happy to do that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But as a quest player, I think what you want is an adventure.
That's exactly it. That's what the difference is on this. And I was approaching this from a quest point rather than just an all-encompassing lore point.
Well, isn't there something to be said, though, for not having a fight or a combat?
That's very true. That's very true.
Just for the sake of having it, or a puzzle just for the sake of having it.
And it also makes the quest very accessible to anybody who wants to play it.
It can, yes. If this quest just wants to be a laid-back sort of talk things out, investigate, and come across some big, big mysteries, then that's a valid way to do a quest. And, of course, on the flip side of things, you've got the elemental workshop quests, you've got the extremely heavily puzzle-focused quest with no dialogue, and that's another approach to a quest.
Which certain people really, like me like. You Are It was another fun example of that.
Hey, nice. So yeah, you've got different genres of quests to do in RuneScape, and it has room for all of these, and that's what I appreciate.
I feel more comfortable now than I did coming in, so that's good. I know you have to go in about 40 minutes, so
yes.
So we'll move through the rest of this. It's all relatively quick. We do have a few questions about the quest and the completion of the quest in particular. First one from Skystone Jexel. They say, do you think any other Temple Knights will follow the example of Sir Owen and Sir Tiffy?
Well, that asks the question of what are the other most prominent Temple Knights we know. So there's a couple that come to mind first. I think someone who's actually a Temple Knight is Savant, who was very prominent in the Temple Knight quests. You contact her through the Com Orb, had a bit of a chat.
Yeah.
I'm very nostalgic for that. The Com Orb is something I still have in my bank after all this time.
Yeah, me too.
Yay. Mm-hmm. But yes, so she's one of the people who was very remote, the tech support over the phone type of character. And I get the feeling she wouldn't have been wherever you were, at the courtyard, and not in proximity of Zaris's aura. So she probably wouldn't be brought over by that. But that asks the question of, did she know whether Sarah Damon was their true leader or not? And you get the impression of someone who knows all that information, someone who has access to all the classified whatnots, then that's probably someone who has been through the full initiation. So I don't know on that one. She doesn't seem like someone who has particular reason to be loyal to Sarah Damon. She just seems like someone who's there for the operation.
Yeah, I definitely put her in that basket of Zara's followers. And, you know, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if a good chunk of the top folks were involved in that.
Yeah. On the other hand, someone else I think of here is Akrasay, who of course was very prominent during Ra'al-Ghatak
Sleeps.
That
was the next one I was thinking of.
Ritual of the Majra, yeah. And he has very, very defined opinions on Zaros, doesn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. Ali the Wise walks into Ritual of the Majra, even proposes the question of maybe working with the Zarosians, and Akrasay just flat out rejects it, and you have to talk him right out of it.
And you know, that's another way of maintaining cover, is to make it look like you're working for the other mm-hmm. side completely. So
yeah, but I think it
could be that.
I think what was said there was he wasn't quite a Temple Knight, but rather a priest associated with the Temple Knights. So I think a lot of that may well have been genuine. And for what it's worth, of course, his fate now is as a white, one of Sliske's Barrow's brothers.
Yep.
And they are freed now. I wonder if, with Sliske being able to communicate with Grigorovic, maybe there would be something similar with the Barrow's brothers at some point. And at that point, if they don't forget him again, that is, it might be interesting to talk to Akrasay and, well, see what he thinks about all this has been going on.
Yeah, things start to get very interesting on mm-hmm. that. Another one was Mischievers during the Temple Knights quest.
Oh?
Magic-based alchemy involved in the magic side of things, perhaps.
Oh, was that during the recruitment drive,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a few of them existing to give you some trial or another.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you might have, you know, the few people you mentioned up at the top, like Savant and whatnot, being aware of what was going on, and aside from surveillance and certifi, I don't suppose that many people knew inside mm-hmm. the organization of what it was. Maybe, you know, just a few key features. Kind of, if you were to extrapolate this out to a real world spy agency, you'd have the person who does the books and, you know, does the money. You'd have also the person who provides the fake identities and whatnot going mm-hmm. forward. So, you know, a few along the periphery, but most of the people are just there as assets, I would say. Mm-hmm.
For what it's worth, though, seeing in the cutscene, there are a good few Temple Knights who turned around. I think, yeah, a lot of them would just have been won over by the aura rather than having any particular
yep.
commitment or connection one way or another.
Very mm-hmm. true. Thank you for that question, Skystone Jexel. Next one is from Miss Alaska. What moment in the quest had you dropping your jaw the fastest?
What moment didn't?
For me, it goes back to the Engram.
Yeah, I was going to say, the first time, or which
mysterious
time?
Engram, or restricted Engram for me.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. There were several moments of that where I was just gasping. I was like, whoa, that's big.
Yeah.
And that's big.
The Zaros
one,
I think, was one for me, but also I anticipated that, you know, the crown was going to get stolen, so that wasn't a huge one for me, but just the Zaros Temple Knights influence was also another big one.
Seeing Saradomin without his crown in the first place was just a real visual shock, you know, because I remember actually saying earlier in the quest, when you were talking to Saradomin just normally trying to convince him to hand over the crown, he says no. And I was saying, so they don't have to make a model without the crown on, hey? And then, surprise, surprise, end of the quest, we've got crownless Saradomin. What a concept. That's not something we've seen before. That's new. He looks smaller without it. And that's a real visual representation of exactly how much things have changed for him.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some rewards that came from this quest, because, you know, it wouldn't be a quest without rewards, and, you know, fairly self-explanatory. 3 quest points, 15,000 archaeology XP, 25,000 divination XP, and a lamp that grants 10,000 XP in a skill of your choosing, and the ability to restore the Pontifex Observation Ring.
Yes. Now, this is something you can find out if you go to an archaeology workbench and check in the miscellaneous items, I think.
And it will give you the ingredients for it.
Yeah. Yes, so your ingredients are a restored Pontifex signet ring, which you get from a Caradet in the prison, and a lapis lazuli, which you can get from a common gemrock, like, for example, in the Alcarib mine. And the third one is the blank observation itself. It's the Pontifex observation ring.
And this is the item they said might help us through the Elder God Wars. As it stands right now, it's a tier luck, tier one luck ring, gives a 1% boost to divination XP, has an increased chance to spawn chronicle fragments, rock attunities, and increases the active time at time sprites.
Nice little skilling ring there.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this of course, gives us a reason to use the Luck of the Dwarves relic for our Saradomin or Saren spirits so that you can use this.
Because no one wants a cheese and tomato batter.
Exactly. So we'll be keeping an eye on that one. Let's do another question here from Miss Alaska. Was there anything you expected to occur in the quest that didn't end up happening?
Well, Clan Quest put together a whole bingo sheet for this. Oh, yeah.
I missed this. What did it have on it?
Oh, my God. So there were various things on it of various levels of seriousness, one of which was serenscream.wav or sliskelaugh.wav. With all the Sliske involvement, we didn't actually hear that laugh sound effect at any point, which I guess would be too obvious a giveaway that, yep, this is Sliske, I guess. Writings on the Walls was one of the bingo squares, which I'm very proud of.
Yes.
We got it.
Wonderful.
Hey. Mm-hmm. Signature Hero Dies was another, but they managed to hold off. Trindine did knock Sir Owen out, but didn't kill him. She could have. But she didn't.
Yeah, I was actually expecting someone to die in this quest, honestly.
Mm-hmm. They held off. Mod Raven managed to hold off. Congratulations. There was some Ravensworn dialogue. Oh yes, one of the squares was Ravensworn Easter Egg, and we did get that because when you are summoning Saradomin with a silent bell, one of the things you can choose to chant if you are a Ravensworn is Mod Raven. And so Owen, in response to that, says, please don't get his attention. I'd like to live through this.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. Ooh, one of the squares we had was Elder Artifact is Used. And really interestingly, for all the talk of Elder Artifacts in this quest, not once did they actually use one.
Yeah, you got to be real careful with those. And I mean, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the locator's relatively harmless. You just figure out where things are. But no one was actually doing that. It was all about just itself as an object, as something to play for.
Yeah, I'm glad my death of a character was on the bingo sheet. Tanis, anything that you expected that didn't?
Yeah, everything that I thought. Because I didn't see any of this. Like, didn't see any of it coming. I thought maybe we would see the beginning of a Zaro-Saren split, which would start to lead to the next God Wars kind of thing.
We had that as square.
Yeah, and I don't really see it playing out like that anymore. But then again, this is the opening salvo, and wars can take crazy twists and turns, and I mean, we already got some of that, right?
Like, yeah, and they're about to fire the first shot, so.
Yeah.
So. All right. You know, we are at a time here, so I wanted to talk a bit about the player avatar refresh live stream, so we'll go through that just quickly. But there was also some changes made this week to the lobby, and changes that look as though that they were for a mobile front. But you know what actually wound up happening with this is that mobile users got a nice update this week. For starters, there is now UI scaling if you open the game on an iPad.
Ooh.
And scroll bars are gone from within the bank on the inventory scroll there. And the UI now also fits better on phones with notches in the top, like the iPhone 10 and above series. So some changes that work their way in on what they called the road to a mobile launch. And, you know, we didn't exactly know what these changes were, but they did work their way into the client this week with that update. And it was surprising not to see these in the patch notes this week, but these are a bunch of changes for the mobile client that are being very well received in the people that I've talked to. I know you haven't had a chance to try it yet on an iPad Tennis, but I spoke with Zant and he tried it on his iPad and it made an absolute world of difference to it, to the point where he felt that he could get an almost desktop-like experience if he just connected a mouse to the iPad.
Wow.
Really? Okay. Yeah, because I could see how the interface scaling would be great. The menus are still a little too small for me to kind of navigate and stuff, even on my iPad. Although I would rather play RS on my iPad versus my phone.
Right.
But because of the limited screen size, I don't know if I want if. Especially because I'm scaling. I don't want too much interface taking up too much room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But well, if I were doing combat...
It's subtle things like the inventory and whatnot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. So some good changes on that front there with that. Vic the Trader's also back. That was a surprise. The Monday after Double XP weekend starts, Double XP Live starts.
Yeah, that's kind of let's keep that tradition going. Like, let's get a new tradition.
Yeah, that's very, very, very welcome. To the point, I was actually considering buying a bond to summon my own.
Oh,
but I didn't need to do that. And they have also brought forward the release of two more official records with releases from God Wars Dungeon 1 and God Wars Dungeon 2 that can be purchased on either CD or vinyl.
Yes, it's so nice to get the soundtrack getting proper appreciation.
Because there's some pretty good tracks in both of those, actually. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in looking for a good gift for a RuneScape player, or even just yourself. Treat yourself, yeah. I'm not going to go through too much of the live stream here because we are already running late on time with this, but just a recap of everything that was talked about. They're currently at full production stage on the refresh as they're doing it. Next step is going to be to create 200-plus items that have to be created to bring this to reality, and they have really ambitious long-term goals. But the point is to just get a proof of concept out early in the character creator and base model of the game to, in effect, improve that early experience. And, you know, feedback is going to be taken in all throughout this process. So don't think that this is a closing time to stop sending in feedback. Definitely do keep sending it in. And Mod Iroh had a wonderful quote here on this stream. He said, you know, please just be patient as we're very focused on getting something out there so it becomes a real thing. It might not be perfect in every way, and it'll be the start of a journey. In a proper RPG way, this is the kind of thing where you leave with your leather armor and wooden sword with a blessing from your grandma, or your grandma who's a witch.
Yeah. This isn't going to be anything new, but I love his philosophy, his design philosophy, and his very simple, beautifully basic way of explaining everything. It's really rather lovely.
Yeah, and the important part is that, you know, he's new to RuneScape, but he gets it.
He gets it. Mm-hmm. He gets how it's based in being able to feel some sort of realism and how it's all about being able to inhabit your character. I know a lot of the controversy, like Twitch chat raging at various new changes made here based on characters not quite being attractive enough as some players might want, whereas really it's all about the reality of what you do in this virtual world and being able to have a body that looks like it reflects that. being able to inhabit what you do and what you are.
Yeah, and you know, the whole general goal with this was to just, you know, provide an update of where they're at. And they started with some, you know, various painting and Photoshop. And, you know, they said the female model felt a bit too weak and there was just something in general that was off about it. And the male model, they said, was just too big, too exciting, too buff. It is still RuneScape-y, but it was just way too much. So they provided some insight on where both of those were going forward.
I will say, had some good pictures.
Mm-hmm.
The male model is still pretty bodybuilder-like to me.
Yeah.
Like they've smoothed it out a little bit, but it's still at the sort of thing that you'd require some ridiculous diet to get in real life. And that's not quite adventurer.
No.
One thing they did say on the stream, though, is that they are constrained by essentially the proportions of the current player
of
models.
The system, the way it's set up. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal.
So you can change
deal.
The shape, but not the size.
And you see that with how long the arms are and how long the hands are and mm-hmm. whatnot. We also saw some pretty funny emotes in terms of the facial structure that was going on, the new animated fingers as well.
Great reaction images.
Yeah, many great reaction images with that. so perfect. Terrifying at the same time. It did an air guitar successfully.
Yay! Yeah.
So, all in all, good progress being made. And if this is something that you have a huge interest in and you feel like you're one of those prime alpha stakeholders in this, definitely give this a watch. But I think things are improving a lot with this.
Really excited to see where it's going. Yeah.
Yeah. And to cap it all off, they had a preview of what it looked like in game as well. Which, you know, they said the reason they didn't take the helmets off last time is because the heads weren't in place.
Well, that's a good reason. Now.
And they also have skin color, the ability to change the skin color as well. So
amazing. We can finally get ahead of ourselves.
Amazing progress. I see what you did there. Amazing progress made in 3 weeks or so. But we do have a couple more questions that I want to get through before we wrap this one up. But before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters for this week and this wonderful Quest Week episode. This week, I'd like to thank Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, Christian S., Cook Me Plunks, Diana, Duramax, Gabrielle, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Joe M., John P., Keski, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Nora, Pernasius, Rastafa, Ricky A., Soupfinder, Staubeve, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. This truly does mean the world to us. And if you want to learn more about this, you can check it out at patreon.com/RSBNB. There you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. You gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits. You get to come to our roundtable every month. And, you know, it's all in all just a fun way to support the podcast and get just a little bit more for as little as $1 a month. For $3 a month, we offer stereo versions of the podcast in addition to everything else and a rank in our Discord server. And for $5 a month, you can gain a shout out each and every week on the podcast and get exclusive access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, you know, just should we ever, you know, hit that $500 mark, Tanis and I will subject ourselves to some pain by undertaking the Hawkins Challenge. So that's on the radar as well. And if any of this sounds at all interesting to you, just check it out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Question from Probably Writing. What god do you think is going to end up being stabbed in the Elder Halls?
Mm-hmm. So we all thought it was Sir Saradomin, of course, at first. But, you know, I'm not too sure. Because Zoras is the one who knows where the Elder Eggs are. And the one who is in the position to, well, maybe start messing with them, hey?
Yeah.
I saw a theory going around. I think Xenon in Clan Quest was talking about Zaros potentially even eating the eggs and absorbing the energy himself. That's his goal.
Mm-hmm. That might make sense.
Yeah, and so some way to sort of hatch it in the process. Now, of course, they have Elder artifacts to destroy, but those are useful to Zaros, and gods are not useful to Zaros. So just kill off a god, get rid of a distraction. You know, considering the conspicuous lack of Zarak, someone
yep,
who is
that
very
could be
opposed,
it.
Yep. We'll
but
see,
it raises that age-old question. Do you really want to be killing gods willy-nilly?
It does kind of leave a power vacuum, but also I think they have too much power to be going around in the first place.
Yeah. I don't know. I just have a general problem with more gods dying at this point. I think they need a very good reason to do that.
Fair enough. Story-wise, yeah.
What if it's like a lower tier god? What if it was Anubis? I mean, we already have.
Like,
we got Death and Anubis. We don't really need two gods of the
what
underworld,
if it's
right?
Saren?
Oh,
what
but if Saren is a good dog.
What if it's Saren and he kills his sister?
Kills.
Well, I wondered that, but...
Well, they already killed the mother. Time to keep on the family killing tradition.
That's true.
Well, there's some unsettling thoughts there. And, you know, I think all of this makes sense. Really, it does.
Yeah, it's getting real Game of Thrones up in here.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Backstabbing!
And, you know, I don't think it's going to be Sarah Dolan, but I think anybody we mentioned here would be good options. So, next one from Mod Jack. Why is the quest so rad? I think the obvious answer to that one is you had a hand in writing it.
Just butter him up, why don't you?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, the writing, but it wasn't... It was the things I didn't see coming, which was damn near everything.
Twisty,
like,
eh?
Yeah, like, all those twists. I love that.
And just the fact that we answered so many lore questions.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm glad I didn't have to do puzzles and stuff. I don't like that. It was
accessibility,
nice to just cruise.
Which works for you.
Yes. Yes, and even though we have a tremendous amount of dialogue, which can be, you know, difficult, really all it did was just take a long time. And with tools, you know, we could do that, you know, pretty easy now. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I want to throw in my own answer for why this quest was so rad. And I want to say it's the sense of fun, because this really was a fun quest. There was a lot of good humor involved, especially with Trindine. She's a fun character, and she carried a lot of it. And even when she wasn't this stuff like Ariane and what she did with those statues, eh? I think they really got the balance of humor and serious, big, earth-shattering lore reveals. They got that right. They got that on point.
Yeah, and that's a delicate line. To walk, and you know, and just ensuring that there's that level of seriousness about it, which is RS. So, I think that works.
They've got the balance.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And for me, it's, you know, the real answer is the lore reveals, and that we finally got an answer, even if tangentially, to the writing on the walls mystery.
So good. So good.
Yeah. And the last bout of questions is from Miss Alaska. What are some predictions for the next yet-to-be-named quest that will arrive in the storyline? And how do you expect the events of this quest will shape the Elder God Wars dungeon?
All right. So, predictions. We have, of course, Karos getting involved. I mentioned earlier about Karapak's probably going to be brought back in at some point.
You're also going to see some kind of confrontation near the archaeology campus, which, you know, is Sentistan. Mm-hmm. Which shapes up for, you know, the Sentistan quest that was mentioned. So I think the next quest on that one, what was the name they called it? Runefest 2019?
City of Sentistan?
Yeah, the City of Sentistan. I think that's got to be the next one.
Mm-hmm. Zaros returns to the old capital with a new army.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. The Zarodominist Empire.
Ooh, I like what you did there with that.
Hey. And
with all the forces that he's been recruiting over time as well. And, you know, maybe it'll be some kind of underhanded spy thing where we're, you know, with our recruitment drive training, we're effectively infiltrating the Temple Knights, except we see them now as they actually are. And meanwhile, while this is happening, you have the Elder God Wars dungeon, the combat PVM side of it, happening right outside, or near it, at least.
Who do you think the factions might be in the Elder God Wars dungeon?
Zaros is definitely going to be one of them. Who does Ariane represent?
Ariane represents Ariane.
Okay. So I'm just trying to think if we could pigeonhole her into one of those kind of things.
Yeah. I think she sort of refuses to be pigeonholed like that.
Okay. Sarah Dominus are definitely going to be there. And
yeah, because it's a sort of GWD2 style.
Yeah.
They're fighting
or
for
we
this.
Could be taking this all the wrong direction because they said think completely differently about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
could be the Elder Gods themselves.
Could be. Could be. That could be the flavor associated with it. But thank you. Thank you, everybody, for the questions on that. And it's such a wonderful quest week this week. So thank you to everybody for contributing on that. And, you know, you have to get going in a few minutes here. So I'm going to let you do your pick of the week first.
Okay, so my pick of the week is a very new game, only released a couple of weeks ago, a few weeks ago. It's called Valheim. So this is, it's on Steam, it's an early access survival crafting game, which usually is the death knell for just about any early access game, but it is actually kind of amazing. It's kind of like experiencing the birth of Minecraft all over again, this time with Vikings.
And, you know, and you know, some of the areas actually look like they could be set on RS. This is what, in some of these screenshots, I'd imagine a first-person RuneScape would look like.
The game is only 1 gig, and yet the simple but genuinely rather gorgeous graphics of it, and just immersing yourself in this world, living this simple life of gathering all your own resources. You have a limited inventory, so you got to build things like carts and boats to carry things back with you.
There's the Minecrafty aspect, yeah.
Yes, and the very real sense of surviving in this land. There are some incredible sailing mechanics too. You build your own boat and fight against the wind and the waves on the sea. Yeah, I haven't played much of it yet, but I've really enjoyed what I have played.
And that's, of course, available on Steam. You know, not too bad. $23 Canadian. I don't know what the American pricing is on that, but definitely won't cost you an arm and a leg.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's all for me for now.
Thank you, Questscaping. That was wonderful having you on the podcast.
Hey, see you next time. And thank you for having me.
But that doesn't mean we're done. We're going to do our picks of the week now. What do you got?
So I kind of got two. I don't know if we've ever had a person before, but I think
you realize you're opening a can of worms here, right? If we're going to be allowed to pick persons, but go for it.
She deserves it. So this week the Texas. Jeez, I have Texas on the mind because,
the horrible weather there.
Yeah. The Tennessee legislature had a bill on the floor to honor Dolly Parton with a statue on the state house grounds, to which she humbly asked them not to do that because now is not the time and we need to focus on what is important at a later date when maybe there's not a raging pandemic. She would be, very honored to have such a thing happen. And I just thought that was like super cool. I think I said in pretty sure you don't see that very often and you don't expect it from celebrities, but I mean, Dolly Parton is that kind of celebrity. I mean, this is the same woman that makes sure, you know, any kid in this country can read. I mean, we used to get the books sent to us from her. Like, it's, she just does stuff like that. So not only is she, you know, Miley Cyrus's godmother, but an actually really genuinely good person.
Yeah, and the problem is that you don't find celebrities like that in this day and age that often.
No, there's always an agenda, or there's always some, you know what I mean? And like, there just isn't with her. Like, it's just a nice, genuine person. So that stuck out, and I wanted to acknowledge it. My pick is, like, it's kind of old at this point, but people have been telling me to watch Deadpool. I finally watched it. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was as good as everyone said. So I'm like, well, I'll watch Deadpool 2. And Deadpool 2 was freaking hilarious. I loved it so much. It was so good. So many one-liners and references and just an awesome movie. Like I said, you know, it's getting old by this point, but even if, you know, 8 out of 10 of you seen it, for those two people that haven't, check it out, because it is really, really good.
All right. Sounds good. I've never watched it, and that's not my kind of movie, but I will take your word for it.
That's hilarious, man. Yeah.
All right. My pick of the week is, once again, for the 10% or perhaps even 5% of our listeners out there, if you exist. It's a Mac application called iStat Menus. And, you know, you have your computer, and most times you just assume that it works. But sometimes, you know, you're running along and you want to, you know, just get a little bit more insight of things that might actually be happening on your computer. And, you know, this is what this does. It's a system dashboard that you can access from your menu bar, which is, you know, in effect the taskbar on Windows, except it's at the top of the screen. It, you know, provides a rundown of everything that your system is doing, from CPU processes, memory in use, how much of your video card is in use as well. And, you know, we were talking about this in pre-show. I have 12 tabs, actually 15 tabs open currently. And Google Chrome is using 2.6 megabytes of RAM. Wow. So it illuminates those kind of things. We don't need to, you know, open up our version of the Task Manager Activity Monitor, as it's called, and you can just see that at a glance if you want to. You can also see all the temperatures on your system, how fast your fan's running, and Macs have a lot of temperature sensors built into them. You know, they have temperatures on the CPU, they have temperatures on the back of the motherboard, tells you how many watts are in use and whatnot. It's just an interesting little application to use if you just want to have a little bit of an insight into what's going on your Mac. And it offers other interesting tools as well, like it can show you weather forecasts as well and let you know if there's an incoming storm. And so it's just that kind of information tool. And another fun thing it can do is, if you have AirPods, it can hook into your AirPods and show you how much battery your AirPods are using, and will effectively, you know, just kind of be that extra little thing that says, oh, maybe it's time to plug your headphones in and do it. And you can completely configure it to look however you want it to look as well. So lots of fun little things you can do with it, from the time and battery. And, you know, there's a free version, but with the free version, you can only have up to one menu widget showing on the menu bar at the same time. If you purchase it, you can have as many as you want, and it's really not that bad. It's only $12.
Oh, well, that's cheap, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's, once again, a Mac app only, but I know there are probably, you know, one or two of you out there, so if this is something that sounds interesting to you, give it a check. It's from a company called Bajango. That's a fun name to say.
Bajango.
Yeah, Bajango.com. So, have a link to that in the show notes, of course, at update.rsbnb.com. Okay. Okay. Are you ready?
Not really. Okay.
All right. We're going to run through some fun double XP achievements here.
Okay. There we go. So, to start off this marathon, we have one rib with 120 divination on the 24th. We have Bowl Buzzard with 99 dungeoneering, mining, and runecrafting on the 24th. We have Captain Meta 4 with 120 ranged on the 24th. We have Houndears, 99 defense on February 24th. We have Jammy Jamie with 99 attack on February 24th. We have Luck PPP with 120 farming on the 24th. Look at there, Shane.
Nice.
We have Malchier with 99 agility, strength, mining, attack, and runecrafting, and thieving, and fire making, and cooking, all on the 24th. Nice job there. We have max quest points with 120 dungeoneering on the 24th. We have Miss Alaska with 120 defense on the 24th, and 120 defense.
I don't know why that's there twice.
That's a moving one. On. We have Shamrock Soup with 99 Hunter on the 24th. We have Zardones with 99 Fire Making on the 24th. We have Bold Buzzard with 99 Fishing on the 23rd. Gyla Fear with 99 Prayer on the 23rd. We have Luck PPP with 99 Fishing, Woodcutting, and Runecrafting all on the 23rd.
All right, you take a break, and I will finish this out as we wrap this one up. So many more here on the 23rd. Mahin with 99 Hunter. Malchior again on the 23rd with 99 Woodcutting, Divination, and Farming. Mesgram got 99 Mining. Rune Dragon got 99 Fishing, Construction, and Hunter. Schnetz got 99 Divination. Silly Cat 98 got 99 Runecrafting. X-Blades got 120 Farming. Zardones got 99 Strength on the 23rd. And moving on to the 22nd, we have Balbazard with 99 Woodcutting. Captain Metaphor with 120 Constitution and 120 Slayer. Chimney Lax with 99 Firemaking. Chodo 3000 with 120 Slayer. Jammy Jenny with 99 Strength. Keski with 120 Slayer. Mats 374 with 120 Invention. Mind with 120 Thieving. Ozazoyo with 120 Archaeology. And Vivian with 99 Smithing. Then moving on to the 21st, we have Ariel with 99 Invention and 99 Constitution. Balbazard with 99 Invention. Chief Snake, one of the very old hosts of this podcast, got 99 Smithing on February 23rd. Darkest Knight got 99 Crafting on February 21st. That was 21st for Chief Snake there. Deltor Polo with 99 Construction. Easel with 120 Herblore. Goku SSJ Bleu with 99 Constitution. Guy Lafleur with 99 Herblore. Kebab Thief got 120 Constitution and 120 Magic on the 21st. Keiki got 99 Magic. Malchior got 99 Fletching. Mesgram got 99 Slayer and 99 Dungeoneering. Miss Alaska got 120 Constitution on the 21st. New Hero got 120 Herblore. Pony Picker also got 120 Herblore. And Rune Dragon got 99 Fletching. While Simply Skells got 99 Crafting and 99 Smithing on the 21st. Spy Human got 99 Construction on the 21st. Up the Iron 05 with 99 Divination. And rounding out the 21st, we have Zardones with 99 Construction. Then on the 20th, we have Balbazard with 99 Prayer, Dr. Bruce with 99 Thieving, God Shaman with 99 Magic, Io Messies with 99 Archaeology, Isthmus with 120 Herblore, Luke PPP with 120 Invention, and 99 Hunter on the 20th. Madhouse SC got 99 Crafting. Malchir got 99 Dungeoneering, Construction, Invention, Fishing, and Smithing. Max Quest Points got 99 Invention, and Mesgram got 99 Invention as well. Then we have Mike Strike 3 with 99 Dungeoneering, and Pony Picker with 120 Farming, all on the 20th still. Ryora got 99 Herblore, Shamrock Soup with 99 Crafting, Shiroshana with 120 Slayer, Silly Cat 98 with 99 Divination, Snowlight with 99 Fletching, Takis Fugo with 120 Dungeoneering, Tim 2 got 120 Herblore also on the 20th, Up the Iron 05 with 99 Hunter, and Xanthangum with 99 Herblore. Then on the 19th, we have Arcane with 120 Summoning, Darkest Knight with 99 Smithing, Keiki again with 99 Construction, Luke PPP appears with 99 Dungeoneering, Crafting, and Agility, Rune Dragon got 99 Cooking, Silly Cat 98 got 99 Invention, Simply Skells got 99 Attack, Prayer, and Summoning, Snowlight got 99 Hunter, Spy Who Man got 99 Summoning and 99 Herblore, Taffing Spy got 99 Slayer, as well as Ultra Dog 177. Under King got 120 Summoning. Up the Iron 05 got 99 Herblore. Xanthangum came in with 99 Summoning. X-Blades 120 Herblore. And Zerdones with another string here of 99 Cooking, Herblore, Summoning, Attack, Fletching. And then Echazi with 99 Woodcutting on the 18th. The Lion with 120 Runecrafting, Xanthangum with 99 Magic, and finally, Zerdones with 99 Thieving on February 18th.
And breathe.
I feel like I was just reading a filibuster there. Except these names actually mean something.
Yes, right? Yes, we won't try to do this.
I think what I'll do is if I ever need to filibuster something, I'll just print out a list of all of the achievements, and I'll just read it.
Yep, just double, like, a year's worth of double XP weekends. Just, yeah.
Oh. But if you guys like what you just heard here and you want to be a part of it, we have a way of doing that. If you want to come on the podcast, or if you want to write for RSBNB Informer, our writing venture, or if you just want to help out around with maybe graphics or some other skill set that you might think we might have a use for, just fill out our help wanted form at update.rsbnb.com/help. Just tell us what you'd like to do, a bit about your RuneScape character type, your RuneScape name, and where we can contact you, of course. So Discord, Twitter, email, pretty much anything that you want, and we'll be in contact with you in good time about that. So update.rsbnb.com/help. We look forward to seeing what you have on offer for us if you want to help us out. Dare I ask what you've been up to?
Well, you know, it's double XP
yeah.
time extended. Yeah. So you know that's a good time to get artifacts, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Are you using Flow State?
Flow State? No.
You gotta that be using that.
Well, how hard is it to grab that?
Let me look that up. Well, you tell me what you've been doing with your artifacts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm grabbing like 10 or around 10 an hour. I mean,
double it.
Seriously?
More or less, yeah. Like, I 16 to 18 an hour.
Oh, for real? This. Okay, yeah. Well. Okay.
You
well,
need 102. I hope it's not locked.
Well, that's not bad. It depends on what mystery is
hiding behind. Flask of Soma. It's actually not a mystery. You could just create the Flask of Soma at 102. It's an Orthanglass flask with some dragon metal associated with it.
Oh,
some
okay.
other things. Yeah,
I'll be able to do
hard.
That.
Yeah.
All right. Flow State then, huh?
Yep.
That might even be worth turning my timer off for an hour or so while I go do that.
Yep.
Okay.
It is absurd what you can get if you combine flow state, double XP, and the consumables. It is absolutely absurd.
That's awesome. Oh, yeah, I should get some consumables. I have tons of Chronotes that I haven't, that I don't, I mean, they're just sitting there. And
yeah.
It's just sitting there and ain't worth anything, right, Shane?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so we'll use them. Okay.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah, the only other thing I've done is, like, I was looking at my bonus and got almost 10 mil in Herb Lore, so I'm going to convert
That's
everything
a good
else
one
I have.
Use.
Yeah, I've got probably a couple more mil, spread out, so I might turn that into Vic and see what we can get bonus-wise in Herb Lore.
Nice.
And then maybe see if we can finish out this weekend with that. So, yep.
Okay, so mainly archaeology for you then?
Mainly archaeology, yeah.
Mainly some Herb Lore too? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. We of course did have that round table, which should be up on the Patreon feed if you want to have a look at it from last Saturday. That was fun. I always enjoy those round tables. This one just flew by.
Yeah, this was really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. So, you know, if you're a Patreon supporter, you can give that a listen. But as for me, I found some archaeology that I forgot to do.
Uh-oh.
I found 5 relics that I didn't complete. I didn't complete the relic involving the lock of hair on the Barrow's amulet because that was too expensive. I also didn't complete the 2 ring ones that grant luck. But I also found that I didn't have the relic that unlocked teleports without cost. And I didn't have the... there was another one I didn't have. But I basically found another, 5 relics that I could, go and get items for and restore them and submit them for that I forgot to do along the way. So that was good fun. I really, really did get some joy out of finding that.
Nice.
But aside from that, I have currently gained 9.3 million Slayer XP, and I've gone from level 103 to 107.
Hey, not bad. Not bad.
Good majority of that with training dummies.
Okay. Whatever works, man. Whatever works. How are you finding the task, though? Or, like, are you doing the quick wins I tried to show you?
I really enjoyed the Chaos Giants.
Yeah.
The elves were no-go.
Yeah.
I forget what else I had since then. I got an Abyssal Demon.
You doing your daily
abbeys?
Yeah, I was going to say, you got
to
do them daily.
No, I just had time for basically one task a day. So it's just been whatever's been coming up.
That one's so fast. I mean, you can get daily Abbeys and daily Dark Beasts. Both of them are great to do every day.
Yeah.
Quick.
But the Chaos Giants were fun.
Those are big XP drops.
Yeah, they were. I also did a bunch of Steel Dragons, which, I mean, those are okay. I guess.
Quick,
but yeah. There was some other one I was forgetting that I did. There's no log
you doing
of your
the,
tasks, right?
Yeah, are you doing the, oh gosh, what are the strike worms up north?
Oh god. I had that They're potentially come up as an option and I skipped that because I didn't feel like the wilderness at that time.
Wilderness. Oh no, not the lava strikes.
Oh,
this one is
okay.
Up in Fremen, the cave.
Oh,
the ice
strikes. No, I haven't had those come up.
I have had decent
lava strikes come up that I skipped.
Yeah, I would skip those too because I wouldn't want to go up there. But the the ice strikes is more of a medium tier task, but
yeah,
it's quick and it's decent like XP per time. That you're
right.
There.
Okay. Yeah. Gosh, what was it? I can't remember what it was, but it's not too bad. It's not too bad. I will give you that.
Nice.
The masterwork helps a lot, the trim masterwork, mm-hmm. Just spreading the damage out. Scythe is wonderful now that I've also got a complete spring cleaner that I never had before.
Yeah, just watch that if you go to Automatrons. They'll eat your lunch if you're doing AoEs.
Yeah, I know. I'm very careful with that. But my next task is going to be the Abyssal Demons with the... What's its name here? It's the relic that needed the Caledonda to complete. It's the Death Note relic. That's the one that automatically notes all ashes and bones.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I have a plan for those, too. Those ashes are going to be used for incense sticks.
I was going to say, that would be a great way to do your incense, yeah.
Yeah.
And especially if you're doing daily tasks anyway at Abby's. Yeah, man.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm even going further, and I'm making my own holy overloads that are going to get made into holy agroverloads.
Nice. So holy overloads were, like, my favorite overload next to the...
Yeah.
I mean, I'd make a few supreme for, like, if I went bossing, but most of the time I just ran holy overloads.
I did that. I have a stack of, like, 1,800. That was 120.
Nice.
That'd be enough for everybody. Hey. Oh boy, we're just talking on and on, aren't we, at this point? I forgot that we're still on the clock here, and listeners are probably wondering what the hell is going on at this point.
We're busy this week, apparently.
If you're still with us, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of RSB&B Update. Oh boy, the time.
Yeah, I just looked at that. Holy cow.
We're going to wrap this one up, so thank you so much, everybody, for being here. And we'll be back next week for another episode of RSB&B Update. Thank you so much, everyone. Take care.
See ya.